Is AI going to create jobs or destroy jobs overall?
I think one of the unfortunate things of the narrative in the West is it will destroy humanity's jobs of, like, you know, you went to an elite school and you studied philosophy. Use myself as an example.
I did too.
Yeah, hopefully you have some other skill. That one is going to be hard to market.
It was
hard to market, very hard.
It was a good education.
A very, very strong education. If you can get a job, you might keep it. But the hard part's what I always thought is, like, if I finally get a job, I'll probably keep it and do well, but I'm not sure who's going to give me my first job. But technicians,
yeah.
If you're a vocational technician, or we're building batteries for a battery company, and the people who are doing it in America are doing roughly the same job that Japanese engineers are doing, and they went to high school. And now they're very valuable, if not irreplaceable, because we can make them into something different than what they were very rapidly. And those jobs are going to become more valuable. Not to diverge into my usual political screeds, but there will be more than enough jobs for the citizens of your nation, especially those with vocational training. I do think these trends really do make it hard to imagine why we should have large-scale immigration unless you have a very specialized skill. Because
what about the foundation for white-collar work in Europe and the United States has been through the universities? What I just heard you say, we're going to need more vocational men and women, and they're going to be, but are you also insinuating we're probably going to need less white-collar?
I think what we need to do is, yes, but I think we need different ways of testing aptitude. You know, it's like, there are a lot of people doing X that should be doing Y. Like, if you could manage one of our systems, like, just the person managing our Maven system in the U.S. Army is a former police officer who I think went to a junior college. And they're doing very, very high-end, very complicated targeting globally. And that person actually is irreplaceable. And I think in the past, the way we tested for aptitude would not have fully exposed how irreplaceable that person's talents are. And would they have been as talented if they had not gone to their college? Yes. I tend to, even inside Palantir, if you look at inside Palantir, what am I really doing all day? I'm walking around figuring out what is someone's outlier aptitude. And then I'm putting them on that thing and trying to get them to stay on that thing and not on the five other things they think they're great at. Like, you know.
Keeping their.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, everyone at Palantir, every engineer at Palantir, it's the most, wherever I go in the world, like for as you know, maybe for 18 years, everyone thought we were like a business joke. And now lots of business people want my advice. You know, the only people who don't want my advice at Palantir about business are Palantir engineers. They're like, hey, Alex, I have an idea about how we could just be in a much better company. And it's always like, yeah, it's like literally McDonald's, but it's like, we should have some titles and you should stop speaking in public. And there's probably right about speaking in public sometimes. I certainly admit that.
I don't think you did anything wrong today.
Yeah, so thank you for that high praise. One of the keys to success is setting the bar very low.
Yes, no, I don't believe that's how you operate Palantir. One last question. Where will the curve of AI go in the utilization? In the United States and other developed economies? But what about the developing economies? How can they participate in this? I mean, I read a research report yesterday that said the application of AI has been so dominant by societies of high education or companies of high education. And they're seeing a very big divergence that is occurring already. And it's so much based on the application of education and how that is being utilized. So is AI going to create a greater imbalance in our world in terms of growth?
Well, I think the obvious first imbalance is it seems like America and China understand versions of making this work, and they're different.
Yes.
But they both work, and they work at scale, and I think that is very likely to accelerate way beyond what most people believe is possible. Like, the discount rate, I think, not in the short term, but in the long term, is way too high on what will be done and how this will impact every aspect of our society. And I would say, especially on military, and then I tend to be a realist, and I think, you know, you have wide divergences. It's going to be hard to have the kind of discussions people want to have where two countries are, and with a, maybe a third following of Russia because they're so good at fighting. But and I'll get to the developing world. I spent a lot of my life, my most important years, and my father's family came from a part of Germany, and I really care about Europe, and especially the German parts of Europe, where I had many of my best years. I still fantasize of going back to grad school not for the learning reasons.
You're going to have more fun?
I had so much fun.
Oh.
We won't go into that. But it's like endless. Sometimes when I'm traveling across the country, I just think of grad school. The tech adoption in Europe is a serious and very, very structural problem. And what scares me the most is I haven't seen any political leader just stand up and say, we have a serious and structural problem that we are going to fix. So that, then you get to the developing world. I would imagine, it also depends what you mean by the developing world. I would imagine with not enough knowledge, you're just going to find pockets that go very well and pockets that go very poorly. As a generalization, like, again, if you go back to this somewhat non-successful soliloquy I had about the underlying architecture, one way to look at the unfairness of AI is it pen tests, meaning it load bears on things. So societies that can, and organizations and companies that can bear that load, have a huge advantage. The problem is if you've been pretending you're bearing a load you're not, it collapses, and that's where you have to start. And so if you go around and just say, okay, what societies and microcultures are going to be load-bearing here, I think you would find that parts of the developing world, certain communities in that are going to do very well. You do need a realistic assessment of the load-bearing.
Yeah.
And there's a certain honesty that is painful for all of us in this technology, large language models, however implemented in software. You just cannot obfuscate what can bear the load and what can't. And then political structures are built to do just that. Like, yeah, yes, I can't fix anything, but I can give you some bullshit line that you want to hear that's going to make you not care about how bad your life is and how much worse it's going to be tomorrow.
Yeah.
I can give you that for free. And that stuff is harder to get away with in this culture. And, you know, I still view myself as a card-carrying progressive, and I think it's the single most important thing a progressive could do is go around and say, yeah, but the revolution that's coming is going to expose the actual market value of what you're doing, whether we want it or not. Like, it's like, I don't even want to know the market value of some of this stuff. But it is over a relative rapid period of time, so next 3 years, you're just going to get market value, honesty in all sorts of character, right, and communities and micro communities. And the best thing you can do if you are in a community, whether that is a large community like Germany or a large community, larger like America, is, and you really care for the people you're representing, is to say, yeah, but we have to kind of look closely at what load we can bear.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.